Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, you did it!
We did it!
The weekend is officially here, and I've got an awesome Friday Daily Jungle to kick it all off with. March brought the madness last night. I chased it with a couple of interviews with coaches already on to the round of 32. Kelvin Sampson at Houston, Dan Hurley of Rhode Island, they both crushed their respective interviews. And an inside look at Colin Kaepernick's private workout with Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. He was there to see it. All of that and a whole hell of a lot more coming right up. Alvin, let's get it. Now, how many times have I said on this show, nothing ever lives up to the hype? How many times? Every time. Because nothing ever does live up to the hype. Nothing except the NCAA tournament. Because as I've said before, even when it's bad, it's good. And when it's good, it's great. And when it's great, it is the best thing ever. And it got off to a great start yesterday with Rhode Island, Oklahoma. The Rams are freaking tough, and they're brass, and they might have the greatest bench in the tournament. Now, I'm not saying they've got the deepest bench, but they've got a bench mob that gets after it. They've got Fats Russell going for 15 off the bench. They've got EC Russell hitting clutch shots in overtime, and they've got Jared Terrell dropping threes from the logo.
It's Terrell. Angevine.
Oh, wow.
Terrell from outside. That close to puts it in. What a three to tie.
Kidding me.
Thanks to CBS. My man Kevin Harlan is a legend on the mic. This guy has seen everything, and all he can do is laugh when he sees that. And he's right. If you have not seen Rhode Island, check them out. And how about Loyola of Chicago? How about them Ramblers? They had a ton of karma coming off Porter Moser's interview here. I tipped them again yesterday, and then they came up huge in the final seconds against Miami.
Here comes Loyola, a chance to win it. Towns into the front court. On the left wing, top to Ingram, three for the win. Good! He made it! He made it as the buzzer expires. The Loyola players storm off their bench. They're mobbing their teammate. What a shot to win it. 64-62 Loyola. And the Ramblers will move on.
Westwood One with the call. One of my favorite moments in quite some time. Dante Ingram from deep if you need him. That was so awesome. The way they didn't call a timeout. My man is cold-blooded. He demanded the rock in that situation. I mean, literally demanded the rock in that situation. And he knocked it down, and he drove a dagger right into the heart of the U. How can you not love this crew? The clutch shot, the wall of culture, the fact that a key member of that program is Sister Jean, a 98-year-old nun who was breaking it down after the game. Remember, Loyola had not been to the tournament for 33 years. Now they've already locked into the one shining moment montage. To quote my guy John Rothstein, this is March. This is March. Now, if the day had stopped right there, it would have been a strong day. But then it got even crazier in the night session because that's when Nate Oates and the Buffalo Bulls faced Arizona. That's a 13 and a 4, but not just any 4. A 4 with final 4 potential. A 4 with the likely top pick in the entire NBA draft. A ton of elite talent around him. But Buffalo was not scared. They were up 2 at halftime, and head coach Nate Oates actually seemed disappointed.
We think we're a better team. We came in after the first 4 minutes, and we think we're better. So I know I'm just being upset, but we got to clean some stuff up. If we don't turn the ball, then we might be up 10 right now. So we got to take care of the ball. We just clean some stuff up on both ends, and I like our chances.
Quote, we think we're the better team. We think we're the better team. I mean, that's awesome. And you know what? They are the better team. They were. 4 minutes into that game, his guys knew it. And with 4 minutes to go, everybody else knew it. Because Buffalo took that 2-point halftime lead, and they turned it into a 21-point hospital job. That was not an upset. That was a team that knew it was better and then went out and proved it. Yes, Arizona had better talent, but Buffalo had a plan, and they worked that plan. They took DeAndre Ayton out of the game, they forced Arizona's guards to beat them from deep, and they couldn't do it. While the Wildcats were going 2 of 18 from deep, Buffalo went 15 for 30. Bear down, beat down. And that ends a brutal and bizarre season for Arizona, a team that was loaded with talent, surrounded by controversy, and saddled with really weird losses. You know, like that 0-3 run they had in the Bahamas. The same team that could have gone to the Final Four or lost in the first round. And that's how they go. But that's how that season is gone, and now it's over. And yet, despite everything from FBI allegations to Alonzo Trier's drug tests, they still look like monsters in the Pac-12 tourney. But then again, that might say more about the Pac-12 than it does Arizona, because that conference had two teams in Dayton and one in the tournament, and none of them even made it to Friday. The America East Conference will be in the tournament longer than the Pac-12. The Conference of Champions is heading home before the Conference of UMBC in Vermont. So a fitting end to a really bizarre season for all involved. Lots to cover with Charles Robinson. He joins me right now. Charles, good morning. What's up? How are you?
What's up, brother? How are you doing today?
Good, good, bud. How about you? How are things?
Yes, I'm doing well. Just grinding, hanging in there.
Always, as always. All right, so let me ask you about yesterday. You were in Houston, and you managed to catch part of a private workout for Colin Kaepernick. Now, before we get to how he looked, you got to describe that scene for me because it seems kind of mysterious. How much were you able to see? How much were you allowed to talk about? I mean, where was it, and what was the setting like? Just kind of break that whole thing down for me.
Well, so a little south of Houston, there's a practice area for the Houston Dynamo, the MLS soccer team here in Houston. And, you know, there's a few football fields. It's basically a sports park for, you know, local youth teams. And then also the Dynamo. And, you know, so I had someone who recognized Kaepernick in the building and hit me up and said, hey, Colin Kaepernick's in our building. And so I was like, I jumped up and I was like, I'm headed out. And by the time I got down there, you know, I saw Kaepernick and he was walking over to one of the fields. And I thought, you know, does this guy work? You know, is he going to work out here? And, you know, saw him kind of warming up a little bit and reached out to somebody with the Houston Texans. And I said, you know, hey, are you guys working out Kaepernick? And no, this guy was completely flabbergasted. He said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, this guy is in your city right now throwing a football. And, you know, why is he here? Do you guys have anything to do with this? And, you know, he said, no. He said, we're not working him out. We don't, you know, are there any other teams there? That's what he asked me. I said, no, I don't think so. I don't see another team personnel. I just see a lot of security. And I said, he clearly is doing a quarterback workout. And I said, they seem to be filming it. And, you know, so I kind of made my way over, and pretty quickly the second, you know, security saw me with my phone, you know, they rushed in and were, you know, shouting me out and, you know, saying no pictures, no video, delete it, whatever you just did, delete it. And, so I kind of tried to wander, you know, a little further away and blend in with, there were some youth soccer games going on. So I kind of blended in with some soccer moms that just watched the entire, you know, workout from about half a field away. But, yeah, it was pretty crazy, you know, just to have him sort of pop up like that and be throwing, you know, and working out. His agents do have an office here in Houston, but, you know, as far as I know, it was not associated with his agents either. So it's still sort of a little bit of an oddity.
I'm into it. It's a mystery. Charles Robinson joining us. He's a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. From where you were standing, how did he look and how did his arm strength appear to you?
He looked good. I could tell immediately, actually, when I walked onto the field, I was pretty close to him and initially, and he looked like he was in great shape. I mean, to me, the first thing I noticed, and particularly after covering him a little bit, his last year with the 49ers, where he sort of thinned out physically, he's back to, you know, the Super Bowl sort of peak physique. I mean, you could tell he was big up top, clearly had been hitting the weights. And, you know, so instantly I thought, man, you know, this guy really looks like he's back to, I guess what NFL teams thought, you know, was sort of his wheelhouse in terms of his strength and physique. And, you know, when he started off, I think, you know, you could see he was a little rusty. But then as his arm loosened up, the workout actually went about a full 90 minutes. You could see the ball was flying out of his hand pretty quick. And he uncorked a few deep ones. He looked great. I mean, his arm looked really good. Again, it's against air, just like any of these prospect workouts we're watching right now. But, you know, just from the standpoint of getting out there and showing what arm strength he still had, there was no doubt he still had zip. He still has his fastball. It was just interesting because we haven't seen this guy throw a football since he essentially left the NFL. And to me, I don't think he's lost anything off of at least what, you know, the arm strength is for him. So I was pretty impressed. I thought it was pretty interesting. And I think what was most interesting was the fact that he did go through really a traditional 90-minute full quarterback workout. He must have thrown, I don't know, anything upwards of, you know, between 100 and 120 passes in 90 minutes, which was pretty impressive.
Clones, this podcast is brought to you by Burrow. Handcrafted in the USA, Burrow makes luxury couches for real life. Burrow is the same quality that you would expect from high-end retailers without breaking the bank. Plus, everything is customizable, and Burrow couches are even stain-resistant. So go ahead, eat your dinner on the couch. This couch fears no pizza. And there's a built-in USB charger for when your devices are in the red. Say goodbye to that extra long charge cord. That's incredible. Better yet, all Burrow furniture is easy to put together and take apart. No tools required, just your bare hands. Enjoy 30 days of naps on your Burrow risk-free. And if for any reason you choose not to keep it, the return process is simple. Go try a Burrow couch for yourself. Order today. It will ship in a jiffy. Use the promo code ROME at Burrow.com and get $50 off your order. Once again, Burrow.com, offer code ROME. Make sure it's in all caps. That's Burrow, and now it's back to our Daily Jungle.
We're talking to Charles Robinson. He is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. So exactly where does that leave us? I mean, we're at the point in free agency where Tom Savage is signing with the Saints. Teams are kicking the tires on Chad Henne. I mean, do you have any sense if there's any interest from any NFL teams in Kaepernick?
I don't think there is because of this grievance. You know, I think the grievance killed it. And you know, I had NFL personnel telling me, you know, agents, pretty much everyone across the board in the NFL said the second he signed that or filed that grievance against the NFL, he's done. There's no way a team is going to break ranks at this point when he's, you know, suing the NFL and signing him to a contract. That's just sort of an unbreachable line. And he crossed it. And I think despite the fact that there are a number of, you know, quarterbacks that I think, particularly when you get to the backup ranks, who he clearly, you know, would have more experience, I think more talent, particularly more arm talent and more talent to work with, there's no doubt he could be on a roster somewhere. And I think even when you get into the lower rung starters in the league, you know, you can argue if you go back and look at his final year in San Francisco, that he at least showed, I thought, that he could be, you know, at worst a lower rung starter in the NFL. But When you file a lawsuit like that, there's sort of an omerta, I swear, in the NFL where if you take the NFL to court and you're not an NFL owner, there's no going back from that. I mean, shoot, Jerry Jones just got nailed for, you know, millions for essentially, you know, sticking it in the face of Roger Goodell, you know, with the Ezekiel Elliott case and then obviously Goodell's extension. So I think Colin Kaepernick ranks far lower on the scale of protected NFL beings than Jerry Jones.
Right, if they're going to come for an owner, not only an owner, but an owner like Jerry Jones, the way they did, I would agree with you. Listen, before you go, one more thing I want to ask you about. You had a really interesting piece the other day regarding Tom Brady and the Patriots, and more specifically, his documentary series. Let me touch on the last episode. Well, actually, overall, what do you make of what you saw in that series, and what does that tell us about Tom Brady?
I think physically, what I took away from the six episodes is that it's a lot more of a grind physically than I think we really realized. We always talk about Tom's age and, you know, his diet and his regimen, the whole TB12 stuff, all that, and think, well, gosh, this guy's in such great shape. He'll play until he's in his mid-40s. But on balance, you know, from a physical standpoint, to me, I was like, this guy struggles. Like, you can see he is getting a ton of treatment in season. Clearly, there are a number of little nagging things wrong with him that we don't necessarily know about from week to week. I think he showed his age far more in that series than I thought. And then from a family perspective, and I kind of said this after I saw him in a private moment after the Super Bowl, I mean, this was a guy you could see his life laid out ahead of him, and it was his wife and kids, not, you know, 5-10 years ago when we're looking at him. And if he loses in a Super Bowl, we're like, oh, all it is football ahead. I can see everything beyond football now. And I think that's some of what we saw in that series.
I mean, essentially, and last thought, in the last episode when he starts to ask questions like, what are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? I mean, is that essentially what you're getting at? There's more to it than just football?
Yeah, football mortality. To me, I couldn't believe it. The last 90 seconds, I was floored. I could not believe what I was seeing. And it was, I thought, to me, these are the fundamental questions of football mortality. It's someone who's sitting there saying, it's harder for me to do this every day, and I have to ask myself these questions. And I think, especially, you know, as I kind of put it, there are a few guys in the NFL who leave the game on their own terms. He's going to be one of those few guys. And when you see those guys depart, whether it's Elway or Favre or, you know, any number of great players, those are the questions they begin to ask right on the doorstep to retirement. So to me, I watched that last 90 seconds. I thought, this guy is a heck of a lot closer to retirement than we realize.
You know, one last thought too. One of the other lines that really stuck out to me is when Giselle said, quote, he tells me I love it so much and I just want to go to work and feel appreciated and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, what about that? I mean, part of that ESPN report about the dynamic within the Patriots was the notion that he does not feel appreciated by Belichick.
Right.
So what do you think when you see that line in the documentary?
Yeah, I thought you're absolutely right. You're dead on. I thought it spoke directly almost to that report, just to hear her say that word appreciated and that he's relaying that to her. I mean, you know, anyone with a significant other, you know, that's who hears your biggest frustrations. And for her to share that, I mean, I thought was pretty amazing. And instantly, that's what it drew my mind back to, was the ESPN report, which really at the core, I think, was about Tom Brady's feeling of, you know, where is he in terms of being appreciated and where does he fit, you know, with Bill Belichick. And I thought when she said that, I thought, man, that's a direct whisper back to really some reporting that a lot of people denied.
There is nobody who's a bigger scoreboard guy than yours truly. The only thing that matters to me is what it says on the scoreboard at the end of the game. Everything else is just noise. I don't care about anything but the scoreboard. Scoreboard, look up at it. It settles every single argument. It renders every single excuse ever meaningless. Scoreboard, period. However, last night in Portland may have been different. First off, respect to the Trailblazers, who continue to roll with a 113-105 win over Cleveland. That's 11 straight for the Blazers. And as ESPN's Chris Haynes said on this show yesterday, nobody saw this season. Well, nobody outside that locker room saw this season coming. But truthfully, it was not that long ago that there were grumblings about that roster and whether or not it was going to work. And now they're mowing teams down in mid-March, and they did it again by beating Cleveland. With all due respect, however, to Portland's win. And again, whenever somebody starts a sentence with all due respect, you know somebody is about to be disrespected. And that somebody is Jusuf Nurkić, number 27 in your program and number one on your trending topics last night. Why? Because of this.
14-13, Portland back in front. Ron turned the corner. Inside! He made Jusuf Nurkić a screen saver! 15-14! The Kevlar bench is going nuts!
Credit Fox Sports Ohio. He made him a trending topic, yes, because of this.
14-13, Portland back in front. Ron turned the corner. Inside! Screensaver! 15-14! The Kevlar bench is going nuts!
The Bosnian beast just got beasted. Actually, murdered. I could have that thing on a loop for the rest of the day and never get tired of it. LeBron did not just dunk on Nurk. He trended him. Trending a guy is the new poster job. And LeBron did that with authority. And I'm not sure what's better. LeBron's dunk or LeBron's teammates reacting to that dunk because they went crazy. You rarely see an NBA bench go college bench mob like that, but the Cavs did. Jordan Clarkson may have said it best, quote, I think there's a body bag in the hallway right now, end quote. LeBron was pumped, and not just by the dunk, but by his teammates' reaction to it.
I knew it was going to be a good one. You know, that's going to be shown for a long time. And I was more excited to look over and see my teammates, how excited they were. That one will last forever.
That one probably will last forever because that was not just a good LeBron dunk. That was a great LeBron dunk. That might have been LeBron's best dunk ever, honestly. I'm not sure what's more ridiculous, the dunk itself or the fact that he's throwing down with that kind of ferocity and nastiness in his 15th NBA season. Let me repeat that. 15 freaking years in, and this guy's dunking like that on seven-footers. He's 33. 33. He's played nearly 53,000 minutes in the NBA, and he's still getting up, and he's still throwing down like that. It's pretty ridiculous.
And if you want to hate on LeBron after that, then you're simply hating to hate. I mean, essentially, you're miserable if you're going to hate that guy after that. I'm not saying you have to love that guy after that, but if you can't appreciate what you're witnessing right now, then you're missing out on something pretty amazing. Drowning in a sea of hate is a horrible way to go. Just as if you're laughing at Nurk for last night, you're missing that point also. Nurk is a good guy, but sometimes bad things happen to really good people, and that was a very, very bad thing. But I'm not here to clown Nurk. I'm not here to bury this guy. In fact, I respect it. Honestly, I seriously respect it. He knew how that was going to end, with LeBron way above him and his name blowing up on every single social media platform. And yet the guy still hung in, still went for the block. The man's game isn't just the dunk. It's being willing to try to stop that dunk, even though you know how that's going to end. You know it takes a lot of courage to step in front of a 6'8", 250-pound freight train like LeBron, especially a freight train that's going to jump and dunk on your dome. I love how his teammates dealt with it, too. They didn't ignore him or look at the replays. They patted him on the back. They gave him fist bumps for doing what he did. Damian Lillard said exactly how it was.
We came to the bench, everybody was dapping Nurk up just for being there at the rim. He's done that to plenty of people, so it would have been a completely different story had Nurk seen him coming and moved out the way. You know, we'll take him getting dunked on, from challenging at the rim over him moving out the way any day. You know, it happens.
I agree. I love that. That's exactly how I look at that. Or as Ed Davis said, quote, "We talk about it all the time. You've got guys who are known dunkers. And the question is, when they come into the lane, what are you going to do? I respect Nurk for going after that block. A lot of guys are scared and they get out of the way." End quote. Truth. Absolute truth. Most guys do duck out of the way. But Nurk went for it, looking to help his team, knowing that he would be trending in seconds and remembered on video for the rest of his life. Respect to the dunk, respect to the dunker, but yes, respect to the dunkee. The easy thing would have been to bail out and stay off that, quote, screensaver. So I actually like it. But you got to give LeBron some respect. 15 years in, that guy still gets up like that, throws down like that on a seven-footer. 53,000 or 53 million minutes in. Oh! Clones, with March Madness here, you have to check out MyBookie. If you already busted your bracket, there is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you have not signed up yet, it is not too late. Lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie.ag. Here's why you want to do this. For instance, are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. This is a service that has been good to countless thousands. This is why you want to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after tip-off. Join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use my promo code JUNGLE to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. Play, win, and get paid. MyBookie.ag. That's MyBookie, and now it's back to our Daily Jungle. We are joined by Houston head coach Kelvin Sampson. Kelvin, good to have you back on. What's going on? How are you today?
Always good to be on you with you, Jim. Everything's going good, brother.
Kelvin, I got to ask, you know, go back to last night. You and I have spoken after so many of your big wins, so many of the big moments in your career. So what's going through your head when San Diego State ties that game at 65 and then Rob Gray's got the ball in his hands, the clock is winding down? Kelvin, were you calm or maybe were you feeling something else last night?
You know, Jim, it was an eerie, eerie feeling because last Sunday we're playing Cincinnati for the conference championship. Same situation. Under a minute to go, we're up three. And their big man, Kyle Washington, takes a three-point shot about 3 feet behind the line and makes it to tie it up at 55. So 55-55, We called timeout, set up the last shot for Rob. Same exact situation, and he settles for a three, which you know, I'd much rather him get in the paint and make a play on that shot. But same situation. I said, you know what? I think the basketball guys are going to even this one out. So, but Rob, you know, Rob did what he should have done. He attacked the basket. Let's see if we can get fouled or get it on the. If you get it on the rim from close, you got a chance. Offensive rebound it, tip it in. If you're shooting a three and it comes out, you have no chance.
Kelvin, what a big-time finish that was. I mean, he goes with that crossover. He splits the defenders with the up and under and an unbelievable finish. He said after the game, Kelvin, quote, "I never played in March Madness. I'm a fifth-year senior who went to the NIT twice. We lost the championship by one in the AAC. That's still in my head. I can't get over it. I didn't want to go home. I didn't want this to be my last game for Coach Sampson." End quote. What does it mean to hear that from him?
You know, he's a special kid, Jim. I can't say enough about the leadership that he's brought. He's got a lot of Baker Mayfield in him, and that he's, you know, he's borderline braggadocious. He's a little bit flaky. He's a little bit right at the center line, but he is all about winning his teammates and his. Everything he does is about making sure that we're in the best position to win. This is a guy in the month of June that before we lifted 4 days, would go out on his own and run 2 miles around the track. And I didn't even know he was doing it until I saw Carl Lewis one day over in our offices. And he said, and he started saying, "Coach, that Rob Gray is the most dedicated basketball player I've ever seen. So you know how hot it gets here. Rob's out there running 2 miles every 4 days a week just before he lifts." So he prepared for this moment. The harder you work, the more good things come your way. So I think Rob's really earned it.
I know how hot it gets out there. I know how humid it gets out there. But, Kelvin, I didn't know that Carl Lewis was hanging around the facility. Has he spent much time around the team? What's it like having him around?
You know, he's our track coach.
Sure.
Leroy Burrell is the head coach, and Carl is the assistant coach. But our 4x100 relay team was the national champions last year, and they're all 400 meter runners. One of our sprinters just broke 2 indoor records. So if this is calling you up or knocking on your door and you're a sprinter and you want to be the best you can be, he's the guy to go with. So it's unbelievable having him on our staff. I love sitting down and picking his brain.
Both those guys, Leroy Burrell as well. Kelvin Sampson joining us. You know, Kelvin, when you came on recently, we talked about the success that you were having in the NBA as an assistant coach and that your name had come up for head coaching jobs, but you came back to college. When you have a night like last night with your players, is that one of those moments that you can only really have in college?
I think so, because of where we started. You know, this was 4 years ago in 2014 when you know, the program was at its depths. I took the job April 3rd, and by April 20th, after the smoke cleared and everybody transferred out, we only had 5 players returning. So we had to go recruit 7 or 8 guys. And, you know, in the NBA, they would have fired you the next year, so you wouldn't have had time to rebuild it. But the administration here has done a great job of giving us the resources to be successful. We moved into a $25 million Guy V. Lewis Development Center my second year. This year we played all our home games over at Texas Southern where Mike Davis coaches. And so we were kind of orphans this year because we're doing a $60 million renovation of our arena. Tillman Fertitta, who just bought the Rockets, wrote us a check for $20 million to get naming rights. It's going to be called the Fertitta Center. So you know, everything is moving in such a positive direction. And for us to make the tournament this year, win our first game, now we're heading into our second game, that just gives us a lot of momentum and positive vibes for next year. I think we've already sold over 5,000 season tickets for next year, which is, I think, the most they've ever sold here for basketball.
So you've got this thing going once again. And when I look back, Kelvin, on your career, you're closing in on 600 career wins, which is amazing when we think about your time at Montana Tech. The old saying, of course, is there are some jobs which are hard. There are some jobs which are bad. And with all due respect, I might even be able to argue that coaching Division II basketball in Butte, Montana is both hard and bad. But you turn that program around, and you've done that pretty much everywhere you've been. So how much pride is there when you go into a situation, you've got a vision, and then you deliver on that vision?
No, it is gratifying. But you know what I enjoyed most about last night as it relates to your question, Jim, is that I just like all coaches in that moment, you have so many texts from friends and family. But I had text messages from kids that I coached at Montana Tech, Washington State, Oklahoma, Indiana, Milwaukee Bucks, San Antonio Spurs, and Houston Rockets. Every team I've been with, I had a text from somebody. R.C. Buford texted me from San Antonio. So, you know, it's just a wonderful feeling to know that you're able to touch lives at the schools that you've coached, and you're able to maintain relationships. Because, you know how it is, Jim. We're basketball coaches or football coaches. Most people that don't know us judge us whether we win or lose. If we're winning, well, you must be doing something wrong. And if you're losing, then you're a bum. But beyond all that, it comes down to having great relationships. And that's something I really enjoy about building those programs, is the relationships that follow you after you leave.
You know, Kelvin, I don't know if you would feel that way or say that type of thing when you were younger. I know I wouldn't, but you start to get into it. I remember somebody once said to me, it's all about the relationships. It's always about the relationships. But when you're younger and you're in the middle of that thing, you don't think that, right? You think it's about the thing. You think about it's the next game.
Right.
So I would imagine now, like, you look back, before you go, you talk about tough jobs. I know you're not going to make it about yourself, but growing up, you had some really tough jobs growing up in North Carolina. Now, the last time you came on, we talked about your dad, but let's go back even further, your grandfather and the tobacco markets. In an interview that was published on Deadspin, you told the story of being 16 and having to hire men who were 25 to 50 and then coaching them up and motivating them during a day's work in tobacco. That's an amazing story. What were those days like, and then how much did that help form you into the coach that you are right now?
Well, for one thing, it teaches you to, you can't quit. And you can't let the people around you quit, because if you do, you're going to lose your job. Most guys that are in employment offices at 7 o'clock in the morning, just living day to day, usually have some kind of personal flaw. They've had something to go wrong in their lives, sometimes by no fault of their own. But, you know, with everything, there's always unintended consequences for people like that. But I would literally, Jim, look for 7 or 8 guys to fill out my crew to pick up the tobacco off the floor in 250, 300-pound sheets, put it on these things they call jacks, which are a wooden rectangle with wheels on all four corners, and stack them up too high and roll them to the different doors so the company could put them on their trucks and take them to the regrind plants. That's what I did every summer. But a lot of these guys were alcoholics. A lot of them were abusing drugs. But, you know, I had to take what I could get. I remember this. Aqua Belva was 69 cents. A Coke then was 25 cents. So they would go over to the drugstore and get a thing of Aqua Belva, which was about 80% alcohol. They drank that Coca-Cola down about enough to pour the whole thing of Aqua Belva in. Wow. And they would drink it.
Wow.
And that would give them their buzz. In the afternoon when they started sweating, I could smell the Aqua Velva coming out of them. But that's a true story, man.
That is incredible.
Guys just getting through the day. And that's what working in those tobacco markets in North Carolina in the summertime was all about, just doing your job and trying to hiring the guys on a daily basis that could help you finish your job.
When you were a teenager, Kelvin Sampson, that is an incredible story. Kelvin, you've got, I could do an hour with you easy, even though we just spoke, but you've got John Beilein and Michigan coming up tomorrow night. So what is the number one thing that you're stressing to your team between now and tip-off to get ready for the Wolverines?
Well, since our game ended last night, I've watched them play Michigan State, the entire Michigan State game, the entire Purdue game, the entire Iowa game in the tournament. You're going to make mistakes against Michigan. Wagner is an impossible matchup with us because our five men can't play outside the paint. So we've got to figure out how we're going to guard him and with who. But they're going to make you look silly at times. And I'm going to tell our guys today when we meet, we're going to go through our film session. It's okay. They make everybody look silly. You know, they I think they beat Michigan State three times this year. And so they've beaten a lot of good teams. But, you know, for us, we just have to be who we are. You know, we're not going to all of a sudden change and flip the script or go bring a new guy in. This is who we are. You know, our toughness and how hard we play, out scrapping them and the ball is missed, we've got to find a way to go get it and make it a 94-foot game. Because if it's a 47-foot game, Michigan has a clear advantage there.
All right, so let me go off the beaten path with this one. Now, you know the debate. You know the debate. Are esports real sports? Are the men and women firing up the consoles and battling in alternate universes just video game addicts, or are they glorious eathletes? I think I found the story that's going to sell this debate once and for all. Now, what I am about to say, I've always said this show is not a family show. It's not for kids. What I'm about to talk about is horrific, and it's graphic in nature. It's actually revolting. It's disgusting. Just know that going in. However, it is also a story about the enduring power of the human spirit, about a man pushed to the very brink, and about a true athlete harnessing greatness and a lifetime of skills developed, honing his craft to fight off an absolute psychopath. Here's the story. A man from just outside of Portland woke up to the worst scenario imaginable. His live-in girlfriend with a samurai sword attempting to carve him up. Legitimately. After finding Tinder on his cell phone and seeing scratch marks on his back and allegedly finding a different color hair in the shower drain, 30-year-old Emily Javier went ninja Lorena Bobbitt, reportedly, on 29-year-old gamer Alex Lavelle. And Alex, with every last chip of life pushed into the middle of the table, responded like Chuck freaking Norris. He said, quote, "I was just so proud for beating this samurai wannabe crazy lady with hate in her heart." He told this to the Oregonian, quote, "I've been preparing my whole life for something like this," end quote. If athletes train their entire lives for their big moment, then Alex trained countless hours for his, spending 12 to 13 hours a day playing and training for Players Unknown's Battleground, a computer game where players parachute onto an island, they collect weapons, and then they go to war. And the guy who has described himself as an athlete, not a sweaty nerd, his words, not mine. He drew on his lifetime of mainlining kung fu flicks as he fought off his psychopath girlfriend who had taped a samurai sword to the side of the bed and waited for him to fall asleep. Quote, "I was able to Wing Chun my way to survival." Wing Chun, if you're not familiar, is a Chinese martial art that's all about close-range combat. Quote, "I saw the look in her eyes. It scared the living poop out of me." End quote. I'm telling you, this guy took an assault, a terrifying assault, but he has come out the other side. This guy nearly lost his index, middle, and ring fingers. Doctors reportedly were able to reattach them. He might have a busted up wrist. He may have wounds on his neck and head and torso. But my man is not laying down for long. He wants back in. He wants back into his E-League. And while some people will clown this dude as a loser who spends most of his days playing a computer game and then for doing hand, wrist, and shoulder exercises and practicing techniques that help him move his computer mouse faster, let me tell you something. Whatever this dude is doing with his time was worth it. In the ultimate fight or flight moment, this guy stares down evil and a freaking katana blade.
He reaches into his soul and he wins the biggest game of his life. Quote, "The feeling I had when I won the fight with my bare hands is just absolutely the best feeling." Quote, "I've played all the sports, won big games, landed some decent tricks on my snowboard. This was better." End quote. Let me tell you something. Debate over. That's an athlete. That's a Hall of Famer. That's a GOAT. You tell me, what would you do? You're asleep, REMing it out, and you've got some psychopath standing over you with a samurai sword that she had taped to the side of the bed, waiting for you to fall out. What are you going to do? What have you done your entire life to get ready for that moment? There ain't no playbook. There's no playbook to run when that happens. How many people have been in that position even? And this guy rised up when he had to. Not only rised up, but suffered unbelievable wounds and still wants to get right back in the game, wants to play right now. And what do you think she did? I wasn't there. But am I to interpret that to mean if she came for his digits, like, I'm going to take care of you so you'll never athlete again? My man, bandaged up and ready to go to battle. Ronnie Lott's got nothing on this dude. And he was willing to lop off a digit to play the game. My man apparently lost more than one. Scary stuff. I'm all about esports. The athletes, the business, the competition. I'm all about it. You find me another sport where any athlete has rose up under that kind of adversity. Dan Hurley is my guest. Dan, it is awesome to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, man, I'm great, Jim. It's great to be on with you, man.
Dan, so good to have you on. Thanks for making time. I know you got a lot going on. Now, you knew you were going to be in for a real battle against Oklahoma and Trae Young in particular. So they've got a 4-point lead at halftime. You guys did not shoot the ball especially well, Dan, from deep in the first half. So what was the mood like in the locker room? What was your message to your team?
I think the team was a little bit frustrated. We had so many great looks from the, from the 3-point line, and I think we were just that first NCAA tournament game, I think, a little jittery, a little overly excited. Obviously, the matchup with Trae Young was super, super sexy for our guys, man. They were juiced up when they saw that Oklahoma flash, and then we were able to settle in the second half and told these guys that, we're going to walk them down in the second half and get a lead and put it away. We're able to, get hot from the 3-point line, and we've shot the ball late in the season real well, and obviously it was a great win for us, and now we get the Dukies.
Dan Hurley joining us. That's exactly what happened, too. You come out, you knock down your first 3-pointers in the second half. You end up going 9-for-18 in the second half in overtime. You're touching on this, Dan, but I just want to bring it up again. What's that say about the maturity and the toughness of your team that they did not get rattled by that first half and instead came out and delivered the way they did down the stretch?
They stayed focused on the game plan, and we're a mature program now. Last year, we had success in March, got to the tournament, beat Creighton, had the Ducks on the ropes and should have put that one away. And we were just real comfortable on the court, here in Pittsburgh. I think we're 4-0 in this arena, going back to March of last year. We won our conference championship on this court last year, and I think we've made something like 44 threes in our last four games. So, we're a hot shooting team, and we were just waiting for some of our guys to get going. EC Matthews, Jared Terrell, and this emerging star, Fats Russell.
So EC Matthews, you mentioned him. He had the go-ahead three in overtime. He had the other one to ice it, and then you got Fats Russell. He had a big game for you, and you said afterwards, quote, "I told him when I recruited him, the only point guard I saw better than him at the Peach Jam last year was Trae Young, and he told me I was wrong about that, and he was going to prove me wrong today." I mean, Dan, that is so awesome. How pleased were you with his performance?
It was an amazing performance, and when he said that to me, I thought he was going to say, "Hey, coach, there may be one or two other guys that were better than me too," but he meant that he was the best. And and let me tell you, you can put a lie detector on that dude, and he'll tell you the same exact thing. He's got as much confidence as any player I've ever coached. He's absolutely electrifying. If I didn't have so many senior guards on this team, playing ahead of him. He'd be a household name by now in college basketball. And if he was playing 30 minutes a game as a freshman, he'd be talked about as one of the best freshman guards in the country. I'm so thrilled that he got on that national stage yesterday and did his thing.
Rhode Island head coach Dan Hurley joining us. Your team is on the national stage doing its thing. You know, you mentioned how hyped up they were when they saw that Oklahoma was the team they were drawing because they wanted their shot at Trae Young. So much hype and so much talk about him. What was your approach when it came to facing him, and how would you describe him as a player?
Well, the first thing, it's disconcerting every time that guy has the ball, man. You know, it's nerve-wracking because he's an absolute just game-breaker. You know, you've literally, when he's a dribble past half court, you're in the danger zone. And, you know, he doesn't have a flaw in his game, minus some physical maturity, I guess. But, you know, his range on his shot, he can score at every level with either hand at the rim. He's a genius with the ball in terms of what he sees, the way he changes speeds. But our goal going into the game was, you know, over the course of the first 40 minutes, we wanted to keep him to, you know, 15 field goal attempts or less. All right. That was our goal. And we just wanted to funnel the ball to those others on their team and make them beat us. He ended up with 18 or 19 shot attempts for the game, but he had 15 at the end of regulation. So we were right on point with what we wanted to do. And that's why we advanced.
Dan Hurley, my guest. Dan, I'm going to ask you about Duke in a minute before I let you go, but I want to go back. There was an amazing moment during the selection show when Arizona State's name was announced, and you were so filled with joy because your brother was going to be coaching in the tournament. Their game against Syracuse obviously did not go the way that you would have liked or he would have liked, but how special was that moment for you?
It was amazingly special. You know, the emotion, I loved the new format, you know, because I didn't have to wait, you know, through all the suspense. I was able to see that, see that flash right away. And you know, what my brother has been able to do at Arizona State has been absolutely amazing. You know, unfortunately for him, he set this unreal standard by overachieving at a level in November and December that no one thought was imaginable. But if you would have said to him or anyone in college basketball that, at the end of year three at Arizona State, that you'd be an NCAA tournament team based on what he took over. You know, he was amazingly successful this year and should be proud of his season. And so it was just joy, relief. It actually brought me to my knees, and I certainly shed a couple tears.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that moment. I thought that was awesome. I really thought that was awesome. Matt Norlander, Dan, did a great piece from CBS Sports. I thought a great piece on you earlier this season. And the work that you've done in taking care of yourself over the course of the season, I mean, it's such a stressful gig. Things like adding yoga into your routine. How is yoga treating you, and what kind of an impact have you seen as a result of it?
You know, it's, for me, it's all about these morning practices, you know, exercising 6 days a week, you know, my meditation practices twice a day, you know, my yoga, you know, the spiritual side. I had a conversation with Billy Donovan a couple of years ago that really set me straight. And, you know, he kind of, you know, let me know that my table wasn't balanced, that my ego, you know, was out of control, that everything in my life was revolving around basketball, and that I wasn't going to stay in the business very long unless I was able to manage the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual aspects of my life. So, you know, it forced me to take a look in the mirror, you know, because quite honestly, I was too intense. I was too wrapped up, you know, in the wins and losses. I became more about the process and then living with the results. And, you know, it's allowed me to focus on being a lot calmer and just focusing on just being the best version of myself as a leader every day for these great kids.
Well, that's really, really interesting. So when Billy Donovan says that to you, like, hey, man, you're out of control. Your ego's out of control. Your life's out of balance. You're out of whack. Is your immediate reaction, hey, man, are you done? I've got things to do. Or did you get it right away?
No. You know, when I was I have the ultimate respect for Billy Donovan. You know, when I was a high school coach at St. Benedict's, I was offered many assistant coaching positions in college basketball. But Billy was the only guy that I ever would have taken an assistant coaching job to work for. For me, it was head coach or bust at the Division I level, or else I would have stayed in high school forever. You know, but Billy, for me, has been like a coaching idol of mine. So making that call, you know, I put my full trust and belief, you know, in that conversation that day. And it's really changed, you know, who I've been, because I was teetering on being – a little bit of an emotional wreck, and kind of a guy who was out of control on game night in terms of, you know, referees and my antics, and it was a career changing moment.
Man, it's such a candid response, Dan Hurley, my guest. So when you do the hard work, and now you've achieved this kind of balance, or you've gotten much better at it, is that win, the win that you had last night, is that a win, or maybe did you enjoy that win more than you could have in the past because of all the work you've done?
No, without question. You know, the wins I savor now and enjoy the good times, and I'm able to, you know, to manage the failures. The failures are still, you know, there's less oxygen when you lose. You know, it's tough to take. There's not enough meditation in the world to make the pain of losing, you know, hurt less. But just my ability to manage it and function, you know, and be a leader of not just, you know, not just the players, but of, you know, I'm an important figure at a university and in a state like Rhode Island. It's important that I carry myself a certain way, you know, whether it's my radio show, you know, or game night, you know, or a donor function.
Hey, Dan, will the bad beats always hurt more than the big wins feel good? And is that the way it should be, or do we need to turn that on its head too? Because every great coach I know would tell you just that. The bad beats hurt more than the good wins feel good.
I don't think, as long as you're active, as long as you're an active coach, you know, I think that the losses will certainly stick with you more. You know, the lows of those low moments on the court, you know, the Davidson loss by one in the conference championship, you know, really, you know, crushed my Selection Sunday. I mean, what should have been, you know, just complete and total joy for a program that, you know, for the first time in a long time was going to back-to-back NCAA tournaments. There's no doubt that loss to Davidson earlier today, you know, kind of, you know, sucked the life out of at least our selection. Not Bob's. Bob's was, you know, Bob's is the real deal for me. But the way I've been able to manage myself has taken a little bit of that edge off. And it's, you know, listen, I was a high school coach 8 years ago, driving an 18-seat cheese bus to games all over the place. So, you know, my level of gratefulness to be in the position I'm at in my career, to be able to do what I do every day, and impact the lives of kids the way my dad did for so many years. I'm just incredibly grateful.
And you've got Duke coming up tomorrow. So before I let you go, what kind of thoughts do you have when you look at Duke on tape?
Hey, listen, if they're a two seed, man, I'm just happy we're not playing these one seeds. I mean, you're talking about, you know, I'd imagine, you know, maybe the top, you know, in Bagley, one of the top two picks in the draft. You know, they've got another lottery pick, probably start five first rounders. You know, their length is scary. You don't see, you know, size and length like that in the Atlantic 10. You know, so, you know, the keys for us are going to be, you know, we've got to continue to make shots from the three-point line because, you know, we've got great guards and we're going to be able to get into the gaps of those zones and we're going to get looks at threes. And then we've got to find a way to battle and scrap on the backboard. If we can find a way, you know, to keep the backboard manageable tomorrow, you know, who knows? This building has been good to us and crazy stuff happens in March.
Like, I'm going to regret if I go a second longer and don't go to Alvy's week that was. A tremendous Monday to you. What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A ton to get done. Let's get at it. Talking about Selection Sunday. Tiger Woods, honks. Who's close?
I was close.
Oh, and what do you know? I am here today.
I hate to say this, but this is
awkward. I am working on this Monday. Here are the basics. Virginia is number one overall. Villanova, Kansas, Xavier, the other number ones. And there are storylines everywhere. We're talking to John Rothstein. Who do you have in that Final Four?
Arizona out of the region of grit. Michigan out of the region of balance. Villanova out of the region of stewardship. And then I'm going to go with Tom Izzo and Michigan State out of the region of royalty.
Oh, my God. This is
a team that only a few months ago didn't even know how to execute a trade for a backup quarterback for the Bengals. And now they are dealing. Cleveland, this is for you.
Oh, yeah.
The second time this season, Wes Miller.
Hey, we're thrilled. Thanks for having me. This is neat for me because I grew up listening to you and watching you. So thanks for making me feel good and being on the show today.
You think you can kick my ass? And I remember I grabbed a knife.
He did it. He got away with it. Can we please move on and stop talking about it? That's my take. Or it would be if I had a take.
Hypothetical.
That was a great interview with Wes Killer.
Good luck against Gonzaga. Anyway, I'm looking to rip a Goldman ticket, so thanks for the vein.
Goldman, Gonzaga, idiotic, imbecilic,
Mitzi.
So as I'm pulling out the paper, a hand reaches across and takes a newspaper. What fool was doing that? So I look up.
Put away from my face.
Dan Marino.
Scrolling. Bam! The Beavis and Butthead movie. Logan and I had one of the all-time great father-son moments. I'm not kidding you. For the first 5 minutes of the movie, we have never laughed so hard at anything in his 13 years of life. But the fact is, he can't afford not to take that chance. It is set up perfectly. A killer defense, a loaded offense. They just need the quarterback, and Kirk Cousins is obviously that guy.
Kirk.
Jason Lockenfora.
There's guys who are, sorry, Copper. Oh, my goodness. We got a full-blown episode here, Jason. I'm dog wrestling.
I was pretty good beer chugger back in the
day. Do you people have that little trust in him who want to hate on Tom Brady so much that you've got to call fake on that beer? That he would even cheat at something like that?
That's apple juice. The man drinks organic goat milk.
And I'll tell you exactly what was in that glass. It was TB12.
Calvin hit dump, I hit dump. Chris Beard.
Normally at pregame meal, we only have like Frosted Flakes, but today we had like Lucky Charms, Cheerios. We're going to grab as many shampoos and conditioners as we can get, man. We're enjoying this ride.
Lavelle Moten is my guest.
As a man, I can be any and everything, but I can't allow another man to call me soft. That I'm saying, they're sporadic. They're turning over a lot, but not soft.
Jordy Nelson is one of the...
If Graham does struggle, there are going to be a lot of bitter Packer fans in 87 jerseys. Be careful what you wish for, Packer fans and Packer management. Be sure you run everything through Aaron Rodgers before you do that. My man, Mike Freeman.
Pete Prisco, who is just an old billy goat, who yells at Sky from his lawn like a old fuddy-duddy.
I got to think they'll have an estate sale for him. Do you think they'll be auctioning off his used colostomy bag?
No, I do not. It's time. The JTP is waiting. In fact, the entire universe is waiting. He's bidding for his golden ticket. Kyle in Green Bay.
Unwort In-N-Out Burger. That place is trash.
Don't come in here and talk crap about In-N-Out Burger. In fact, without In-N-Out Burger, there probably is no Jungle.
He's never beaten Mike Travis, and he also hasn't beaten OU.
Count me as one of the guys who loves Baker Mayfield. And if I'm on the clock and need a quarterback, I'm taking this guy, and I'm not looking back.
Tyron Madden, you better get a haircut. Can you just imagine him paired up with Rodney Barber?
But it's time for me to go to the Ronde Barber, the Rome.
John in L.A.
The mighty 1090 can burn in hell. I'm out.
You really don't want to say that anybody should burn in hell.
Email.
I don't need a 16 to beat a 1. I need a 16 to add a 1. Signed Kip. Let me tell you something, Steve. One more Kip winger set. I'll tell you to burn in hell.
Burning.
Who do I see coming out of their lodge is David Faustino, Bud Bundy.
Do you know Johnny Unitas?
Oh, yeah.
Who's that?
The guy that got drunk and tried to kiss Susie Colbert.
I want to kiss you.
Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah. Holy crap, Hawk.
Wow. Because at the end of the day, Van Smack, I'm as fat as I am because of cheeseburgers. It's almost like they ate meat.
And it's almost like they killed me.
First day upsets. Do not sleep on the Loyola Ramblers. Dante Ingram from deep if you need him. 17 floors of stairs. And I said to Hawk, hey, don't sweat that. We'll never have to worry about that here. Of course, will die or will burn to death.
Burning.
Kelvin Sampson.
And I didn't even know he was doing it until I saw Carl Lewis. Okay, he started saying, Coach, that Rob Gray is the most dedicated basketball player I've ever seen.
Dude, you're like a food blogger that doesn't blog.
The simple math says that's 50 hours on hold.
Like, I'm going to take care of you so you'll never eat-elite again. Dan Hurley, my guest.
He's a dribble past half court. You're in the danger zone. He doesn't have a flaw in his game.
I don't black out often. Usually when I do, I wake up covered in Ron and Nicole's blood.
Oh, hi, Mr. Marino.
Rome, always. Thank you, my guy.
Guess what, Tom? Eat a strawberry.
Chicken sandwich.
Pinching a loaf into my hamper.
Hey-o.
Man, these pals are like Egyptians.
It is Plaid Tuesday.
Casper versus Chugwater.
Lance, eat. Oh.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
And LaRon Prophet.
Jello testicles.
Thanks for the vein.
Live long and prosper.
To be on the show is an honor with you, man.
Racket alert.
Good night now!
What a day, what a week. Love it. That's it for Friday's Daily Jungle. Have yourself an awesome weekend, and I will catch you right back here on Monday. See you then. I'm out.